Good morning. It's Paul. It is Wednesday, October 23rd. I looked it up. And it's just past 8 o'clock a.m. and the sun is just getting a little up. I have pink clouds overhead. Street lights are about to go off. We're getting to the point where I'm actually walking the kids to school. Really, just a few more days, it'll be before sunrise. As it is, it's sort of just sunrise is just getting started. So we did pretty well this morning. We actually got them to the door at 7:58. Although the school's clock is still a couple minutes fast. And we didn't have to walk quite so fast because we set out at exactly 1:45. So 13 minute walk without rushing too hard. If we set out at 22, we could walk a little more leisurely. The baby is adjusting to life outside. He's starting to get pudgy. Little baby Benjamin getting little chubby double chin like babies do, at least healthy babies, breastfed babies. Ours tend to get the first couple months up until the 3 month mark or so, they just tend to gain weight and get really pudgy. They look like a little butterball. And then they hit some kind of a trigger point and start to grow vertically. Except for Josh, he's always been shorter and thinner. And it still worries me how his height isn't what it should be. His weight isn't what it should be. We had him down to a pediatric endocrinologist at the University of Michigan, and she thinks he's fine. There's nothing odd about his proportions or his height. There's nothing to treat. And I don't know. I don't want to be a OCD crazy parent. I also don't want to treat him for something that's just, I don't know, cosmetic. Is your height just cosmetic? But I would like to get a second opinion whether he actually has a dwarfism that should be treated. So that he's not, I mean, effectively, if you're short enough, you'll be disabled, and so it's like being disabled in some way. If we can avoid that, that would be good. He doesn't have to be a basketball player. So I slept on the couch again downstairs. Didn't sleep that well. Got lights out about midnight, but I was up at 1:45, and then again at 5 something, and then The alarm goes off at 6:30. I finally got up about a quarter to. So I don't quite know how much sleep I really need, but I have a feeling that's not quite enough because of how tired I get mid-afternoon the next day and how I almost put oatmeal in the French press coffee maker. A little bit more would be good. I feel like I'm running on adrenaline still to some extent. So, last week was a difficult work week in that my supervisor was out for 3 days without letting us know that he was out. And I had been relying on this spreadsheet of assignments where basically when I finished a task, you go in, you check out another assignment, you put your initials next to it, and then you work on that, and when you're done, you commit your documents and mark the date you completed it. That ran dry, and I was asking him for more to do and not getting anything, except my assignments have become vague, like not review this document and write up a review form, but read up on this. And so I didn't think that was really billable. Essentially, it's kind of like this. When I'm tired and spacey, it helps a lot to have a really simple, focused task, even if it's tedious, even if it's dull. If I'm running on sort of a lack of sleep or stressed out, if I have some code to write or something very specific to write up and work on, that's a lot better than study this. But we did have a conference call about that on Monday. The upshot was that I only really was able to bill 24 hours worth of work for the last week, which is really a short week. It should have been 40. I mean, it's basically in my office 40 hours, but only had 24 hours of billable work. We had a conference call on Monday to talk about that situation because I'm not the only one who doesn't have quite enough to do at this juncture. And I still don't have a focused write a document or write this or that task. I'm still waiting on that, but I have a functional area and I have a couple, like a book I'm studying. And so I feel a little better, and I've been told that they want me to bill 40 hours if possible, even if I'm just studying documents. So that's a little reassuring. I have an invitation to Chicago to a party, actually. My employer, Optime, is having like a consultant appreciation party. They're doing a service day, which I won't be able to do, for the Chicago area. And after that, they're having like a reception at a hotel in Chicago. And I'm thinking that as far as networking and actually meeting the people I'm working with, indirectly, kind of, because I've never met my Optime supervisor face-to-face or anyone else there face-to-face, it would be great if I could meet these people in person. They could put face to name and vice versa. named a fish. No, I could put it there. But traveling to Chicago with it's a long drive. I think it's 4 or 5 hours. I could do it. I'd probably want to rent a car so as to leave Grace with the car, and I'd probably want to stay overnight. Yeah. It's not so good for me to be driving at night. My eyes aren't great. My night vision's not great, and I'm having trouble with glare because of some issues with my eyes. So I do have a topic. I actually did get out a little stack of business cards and make myself a hipster PDA. Topic's not in my iPad. It's on an index card. So the topic is Apple and the cult of hipster hardware. Apple rolled out some new products yesterday. I didn't watch the talk. I rarely do. I didn't follow live chat. It wasn't that exciting for me. But I went to their website afterwards and looked at the tech specs and the product pages, and one of them wouldn't load, and I'm absolutely sure it's because of Obama's plot to destroy America and turn us into socialist Kenyan Muslims. No. I'm sorry. I thought that was healthcare.gov we were talking about for a minute. But they've done this thing with their product naming again, which just kind of, maybe this is just pedantic parsing, but I think there's more to it than this. They won't stick with any kind of a product naming and numbering scheme, and it's funny because they want their products to be differentiated strongly in terms of generation, in terms of I should be able to see your iPhone from across the room and know that yours is not the new one, that you're one or two or even three generations behind, you loser. How could you do that? You're not worth talking to if you are behind the curve on your iPhone. So they want that kind of pressure in upgrading. But on the other hand, they seem to want to avoid obsoleting each generation before it's completely sold out. And so the result is constant confusion. So like the iPad, some of their products are numbered, some are named, some are named with specific features. But it's been a problem for a long time. So my example is Apple has a very successful product line called the MacBook Air. Their laptops used to be called PowerBooks, but then somehow they became MacBooks. I'm not sure why. But maybe to differentiate them from eye devices, I guess. But the air didn't start out as a home run. It was the lightest, thinnest laptop around, and their innovation was to basically remove all but an extremely minimalist set of ports. I think it has a USB port. I think that's about it. I haven't looked at the product line in a while. But and then the idea was that it ran by air, basically. It did everything it needed to as far as being connected to a network over Wi-Fi, and also Wi-Fi that was upgraded to a speed that was now fast enough to make that reasonable. And had a long battery life. So that product has gradually, you know, continued to get better, and it's pretty amazing now. It's a great product. I would like to get one. I haven't, but that would be for an actual laptop, that would be probably my Mac of choice. If it was going to be my only machine, it's not a desktop replacement for me as far as doing audio stuff and video stuff and lots of hard drive stuff and all that, so I wouldn't really use it that way. But as far as taking some pieces of work to a cafe or something, that would be it. But so that's the Air line. Meanwhile, the iPad line has been basically an extension of the iPhone design, a tablet, larger size tablet, and that's been very successful for them too. They've gone through four major generations of iPad. They haven't, it's very confusing because the products aren't typically clearly numbered, you know, on the packaging, on the SKUs and whatnot. But so basically I have an iPad 4, which I bought earlier in the year in order to work on iOS software development to try and get some line items for my resume, and did learn some things, but it wasn't completely successful at that. And it's a pretty amazing product. And so the next one, which is basically an upgrade, it has no major new features unless you count being lighter and faster as a major new feature. And I only count that as a major new feature if it allows people to do something that's qualitatively different or new than they could before. And this is sort of a general problem in the industry, is that, you know, breakthroughs come not by this process of stepwise refinement. The process of stepwise refinement is expected now and anticipated and old news. But to the engineers who worked on it, this was an incredible achievement. An enormous amount of work to get this thing down to 1 pound and so light that if you had it in a stack of newspapers, you might accidentally toss it in the recycling bin and not notice. I think someone did that with their MacBook Air. There was a story about that. So it is possible for an expensive electronic device to be too small and light. I have to tell you. So I didn't see no real rational reason for them to change the naming, but now it's the iPad Air. And apparently the two iPad lines now are the iPad Air and the iPad Mini. And they also are still selling the iPad 2. But I don't understand this. The Mini makes sense. But if it's a Mini, what is it a Mini of? It's now a Mini of nothing. Nothing in their product line. There's no iPad except the quite obsolete and lower priced iPad 2. Does that make sense? It doesn't quite make sense. Why isn't it just not the iPad 5? And now, what is the Air? The MacBook Air has a keyboard and it's a clamshell style laptop. But now it's related to the iPad? I don't get it. So, anyway, maybe it sounds like picking apart angels dancing on the heads of pins. But it seems to me like Apple is muddling their own brand. And what I hear is that the iPad is becoming a victim of its own success. In this sense, that people aren't lining up to buy them anymore. And I think the reason is, well, besides that the economy is still doing poorly and a lot of people don't have money, including me, I think the reason is everyone who's likely to want one in that initial surge of the first few years of the product life cycle has probably bought one, and they actually, unless you drop them, they're pretty reliable. And despite the fact that the new ones are much faster and have Retina displays and longer battery life, they're not qualitatively different. So, like, when a laptop could finally deliver a charge that lasted something like 5, 6, 7 hours, that was qualitatively different because now you could take your laptop on a flight from one coast to another and work on it the whole time. That was a new thing you could do. But the iPads have, I don't know what the first one's battery life was, 5 hours or something, 6 hours. But they've gone from maybe most of a workday to longer than a workday. And that doesn't enable you to do anything radically different. And so there's no, that's not a killer feature, is what I'm saying. It's not a game changer or category maker or something like that. The iPhone, when it came out, the idea behind the iPhone is you no longer had to carry separate devices as you went out around your daily errands to get your email, your text messaging, your this, your that, and your phone. You just carried the one device. And so that was a game changer in that sense, you know. New category, which is basically defined the smartphone. But the iPad Air, it's just already has a Retina display. It's just lighter and lasts longer. Some minor features, I mean, faster, suppose that's expected. And so they're undercutting their success. So Apple's trying to counter this by saying, oh no, this is the heir. It's new. But that implies that it has something in common with the MacBook Air line, which it doesn't, because the iPads have had Wi-Fi since the first one. It's their only means of getting on a network. Anyway, does this make sense? I'm going to pause for a minute and blow my nose. Anyway, so this isn't important. It seems like Apple is muddling their product lines and product naming, and it's not a big deal, except that people are scrutinizing the company closely, watching what they do and release since the death of Steve Jobs. Why is Apple important? Well, they are the innovator in the computer and electronics industry. There's really no denial of that. They are, in that sense, the most important company in the world now. It seems to me that the fact that that's true, and me pointing it out, does not make me an unqualified Apple hipster fanboy. I held out for a long time buying any new Apple products because of their shift to manufacturing in China. I did finally buy an iPad. I thought that it might be important for my work to be up to date on iOS and have an app in the App Store to prove that I could do iOS development. Wow, the trees are beautiful. The sun is at an angle as it's come up, and it's illuminating this corridor of old, almost senescent trees in our neighborhood. And they're just the yellow and red. They're not fully turned yet, but they're turning. The yellow and red orange leaves are just glowing with this light. It's beautiful. The moon is still up too. I'm glad I get the chance to be up and moving. And these walks, I think, are gonna help my health. My stomach hasn't been right for days and days. I'm not sure what's up with it. I'm sure stress has a lot to do with it, being off our diet, being off our schedule. I hope there's really some viruses as well, but I hope there's not more to it than that, because despite the wonders of Obamacare, I don't have insurance yet. I'm watching a city vehicle with a flashing light on it stopped in front of a house on the north end of my street, where couple people are standing in their driveway, like waiting for something or just looking out at the street, and I don't quite know what's going on. It's strange. I'm gonna walk down the other side of the street on the way back on my lap, so maybe I'll say hi. I'm gonna pause. So, I am an Apple hipster fanboy in this sense. My relationship, I guess you'd call it, my interest in their product lines and all that goes way back. I never used an Apple I personal computer, but I used, I think the first I used was a 2 Plus, a 2, 2 Plus, 2E, 2C. I used 2Es in high school. In 1977, Apple was also the hipster douchebag computer. Here's how, what I mean by that. They were the personal computer that the wealthy kids could afford, because a Radio Shack TRS-80 cost $500, and I don't know all the prices of the next few that came out over the next few years into the early 80s, but like boxes like the Commodore 64 and all that eventually came out, like, I don't know, $400 price range. There was a TI, a computer that came out closer to that price range. But the Apple II cost $2,600. So it was, this is in like 1977, 78, $79. That's a lot of money. That's more than a Mac Pro is now. The new Mac Pro, which is like the highest end PC there is. Pretty much, until you get into server boxes, rack servers, and blade servers, and all that. So, yes, you could do more with it. It was more of a hobbyist machine. It was more open. It was a little more capable than the TRS-80, but it wasn't. It didn't have that, eliding some of the details of the chronology. The TRS-80 actually was out first, I'm pretty sure. But it wasn't so much a populist, hobbyist computer. There's a book out called Priming the Pump, How TRS-80 Enthusiasts Sparked the PC Revolution. And it's a good point. It makes some good points. It's not really a very detailed or historical account. It's kind of a combination of history and personal memoir. But it has a lot of great detail about what it was like in those days for early software vendors and hardware vendors, and how that whole hobbyist computer ecosystem started to thrive. I used other computers. I used a Wang with a basic interpreter, and that read, like, would punch paper tape to store programs, read paper tape. I did use punch cards, not at school, but only, I think, on one occasion when I got to go to some kind of facility as part of, like, this explorer group associated with scouts. Um, so I was aware of what they were like. And the computers I had were, by necessity, the lowest cost ones, the hobbyist priced ones, the populist ones, and the Apples were the elite computers. And that situation remained for many years. But it is, I found it less useful to grouse about Apple's prices and their success, because in retrospect, they turned all those years of profitability into R&D. And what I have mostly admired about their product lines is their hardware and software integration, and even more than the hardware innovation, their software innovation. I'm not seeing any very interesting hardware innovations in the future. Someone on, one of my friends on Facebook was saying, people get so worked up about these things, it's just a computer. That's true, except not true. The era of the general purpose computer, where you have a computer that you're in charge of, that you can install whatever you want to do, you can write code on it to run, you can learn everything about it, you can put your own software on it. That era is, well, it's still going on, but it's kind of coming to a close, and I don't think that's a good thing. Cory Doctorow had a long essay on the end of general purpose computing as foretold by DRM, digital rights management, and things like app stores and walled gardens and application signing, and the fact that if I want to write an iPhone app, I have to pay for a developer membership, and the only way I can distribute applications, well, it's not quite true. There are some options if you're writing something for a for an in-house business or whatnot, but is to have Apple vet them and put them in their app store. These things have been around long enough that people kind of take them for granted, but if you were to propose them all at once to a software developer in 1977, who was earning a living by duplicating floppies in their basement and sending them out mail order via ads in the back of 80 Micro Computer magazine. That would have been fascism. But he's right in this sense, that these devices, like the iPad and the iPhone, they are computers, but they're not, they're not quite computers. They're appliances now. And that means that, you know, people continue to innovate in appliances. Like, there are new designs in washing machines. There are new designs in cars. But aside from, like, you know, electric cars and hybrids and whatnot, no one is saying with a straight face, this new 2014 Hyundai or Ford or Mercury or whatever is revolutionary. It's a category killer. It enables you to do things you've never been able to do before. that's laughable. Same thing with the dishwasher. Now, there are some really nice new clothes washers. Some of my friends have a washer that plays music and weighs your clothes and washes them slowly, uses less water. It's more like a, I guess it's kind of a German style clothes washer. It gets them cleaner with less water and less wear and tear on the fabric. You know, and that's all really cool. But it does the same thing as an old school clothes washer. It just does it a little nicer. It makes you feel better when you use it. It doesn't revolutionize clothes washing. That's why Apple's not going to be selling some huge new bolus of iPad Airs. That's why it doesn't make sense to call them something other than the iPad 5. And that's why the idea of radical growth in the category of new devices that are only quantitatively better in battery life, speed, and weight than the old devices is not actually going to earn anyone some radical new piece of the market share. You have to be a partisan hack to believe that Apple doesn't already have a commanding lead in devices like the tablet computer, where their battery life is twice that of the equivalent Microsoft devices. But at the same time, you'd have to be a partisan hack to believe that that situation will continue indefinitely. And ultimately, it's not the hardware. Apple's hardware is very nice. It is one step better than any competing hardware because they have deep pockets to do their inspections, to do their sourcing, to keep their manufacturers in line, to make their slaves work just a little harder and put out just a little better product than their competitors do. But the real secret of their products, the reason that people buy them, the reason that people come back to them, is that they work better. And that's that boundary of hardware-software integration. I never find some Apple product that I don't think is worth criticizing in some way. I was trying, I installed iOS 7 and it messed with things on my iPad, but it was free. It's hard to get too bent out of shape about this free upgrade. I don't really like the flat look. Maybe I'm not used to it, but it also like turned off all my mail accounts and I couldn't for a while find a way to activate them all again. I'm not sure why it did that. I hadn't changed anything. It just did the upgrade. But I was struggling to find a way in the iOS mail application to select a whole bunch of messages and delete them in bulk, like 500 spam emails, 5,000. And apparently you can't. There's no good way to do that. And I noticed that I did an upgrade to iTunes on my Mac Pro, and I noticed that, much to my annoyance, they've changed the user interface for podcasts yet again in a way that has made it unresponsive. And these little buttons now that match iOS 7 are now in iTunes, and they don't work. They don't respond to clicking. They don't do anything. It was driving me crazy. I finally just quit it and launched it again, and then they were working. So clearly there's some stuff to work out there. So I'm criticizing this integration and the clarity of this design and their constant tweaking of this design, but that's the thing. Most user interfaces and most designs have not, to this point, for the layperson, for the consumer, for the appliance user, have not been worth criticizing. And they are now, because they are appliances, and you can come to understand them and like or dislike the way their features work the same way that you could like the way your 2014 Hummer or your Prius or your F-150, the way they respond to your input. Okay, I'm just about done with my second lap. It's been, I think it's a couple miles I've walked. That's good. I will talk to you all later. Bye.